Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location. Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
At the UPS Store, we know being a small business owner means holiday time is still go time. Still get those orders shipped time. And still re-up on stamps and supplies time. That's why this upcoming holiday, while others close up shop, we'll be open. And happy to help you keep being unstoppable. Come into your local store today. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS Store. Be unstoppable.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's relating to it. Everybody has seen someone like this in their lives at some point or another. If you haven't, consider yourself lucky. Before we talk about The Perfect Neighbor as a documentary, we need to strip it down to what it really is, a two-year feud that ended with a mother dead on the other side of a closed door. This wasn't a moment of passion. It was a slow burn. 2 years of complaints, phone calls, racial tension, and entitlement that finally ignited into violence on June 2nd, 2023. A mother of four, A.J. Owens, walked up to that door trying to protect her children. On the other side was a woman, Susan Lawrence, who spent years convincing herself she was under siege in her own neighborhood. The bullet that tore through that door didn't just kill A.J. Owens. It shattered the illusion of what we call neighborly. It forced the country to ask whether our idea of safety has become so warped that fear now outranks humanity. Siobhan Scott is joining us, psychotherapist and author. This is one of her books, and I have my favorite little Halloween decoration in it right now, Siobhan. You'll like that. This is Nightbird, available right now. Siobhan, before we talk about what we saw, let's talk about what this is, a long-running grievance that calcified into lethal certainty. From where you stand, I mean, what sort of mental behavioral pattern takes someone from petty complaints to firing through a closed door?
This is a fascinating case because usually in true crime, we're talking about perpetrators who we call them in the cluster B group of personality disorders. Mm-hmm. And this is someone very different who committed murder, right? But she's not typically would be looked at as a psychopath or a dramatic person who is known as a criminal. She appears to be this little old lady. So I can't say, of course, definitively what her diagnosis would be without meeting her personally. But I would sure like to know a lot about her history, because what kept coming to me over and over as I was watching it was a very different kind of personality profile. And this would be from from the group called Cluster A, the odd and eccentric group. And so I would love to know her history of social relationships, the way she perceives herself in the world. My guess is that she's always been somewhat entitled and angry and carries grudges. I think if you wanted a poster person for Injustice Collector, this lady would fit it.
Does odd, though, I mean, there's a lot of odd people in the world. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are like this. Can you define what you mean by odd, I guess?
Yeah, odd and eccentric is simply the overarching title of Cluster A personality disorders. Of course, being odd, I'm kind of odd. You guys are kind of odd, right? Yeah, we're doing what we do. We're odd. So it doesn't mean that you're just unusual in that way, but it's a personality disorder. In this case, the one that came to my mind that I would certainly be looking at with her is the paranoid personality disorder. And this is a person who doesn't typically make close friends. They're very standoffish. They tend to be deeply suspicious of other people, and that may be focused around a racial group, a religious group, or it could be a complete fantasy about a political party or something like that. But it's always this sense that they're being victimized, and they stew on it almost to the point of feeding on it. And they don't have, overt delusions like believing things that couldn't possibly be true. The things they believe are generally within the realm of possibility, but it's clearly a misperception. They're seeing malevolence in benign situations. They take things very personal. And so if this is truly a person in the Cluster A category, in that paranoid camp, this would be something that has been a lifelong pattern for them. And so that's why I say it would be so interesting. You know, the documentary gave us all the police footage, which was fascinating, but it would be really nice to see an interview with her where somebody went into her history and her past, because I would guess that this is a longstanding pattern with her. And before she lived in this particular neighborhood, she had issues with other people. She was clearly deeply racist. So I would guess that that's been something that's followed her throughout life, and somebody who just basically feeds on anger and keeps problems going. So when you have those qualities in someone where this has really impaired their ability to function normally, that's a sign that you're probably looking at a personality disorder like that.
Interesting.
Because fear is interesting here, because that's the easiest way of saying it. She was fearful of these people. But in reality, if you really break it down, what is that fear based on? It's some sort of distorted way of thinking about these people that are around her.
Exactly.
And in this given moment, it was a group of children, playing outside. In this case specifically, they're out there playing basketball, they're playing football, they're running around, they got jump ropes. I mean, they're kids. They're kids being kids, which, number one, is a rare thing to see in society today. Mm-hmm. Children out there actively doing what a lot of us did. And rather than this woman looking out her door and going, isn't this good? Like, look, these kids are outside. They're playing. They're having fun. They're not sitting on their phones. They're not in front of a video game. They're not doing 1,000 other horrible things they might be able to do coming from an impoverished area where bad choices run rampant. These kids are being kids. And yet somehow in her mind, her cognitive distortion of reality viewed them as a threat. That's such a weird way of looking. I mean, there's one thing to be annoyed by children making noise. You know, I can get that, okay, I want some peace and quiet, whatever. But at the end of the day, you have to look at what reality is here. And she clearly was not doing that because of her distorted reality, which then created fear. Let's dive into that a little bit deeper. How and why would someone twist this around in their mind to view these children playing as a threat?
Mm-hmm. That's the strange piece of this kind of thing, which is why we would say it's probably indicative of a longstanding pattern of a personality mm-hmm. disorder, because clearly they weren't a threat. I was celebrating, mm-hmm. just as you were, watching these kids playing outdoors. It's like, that's what we keep telling people, to get their kids outside and let them be normal in that way. But a person like this, and again, what causes these kinds of things? Probably genetics, probably very like some of her relatives, very much like a parent raised in a home where this was a style of thinking which reinforced the genetic tendencies. And there has probably always been an enemy in her life. And if it wasn't this group of children, it could have been who knows what, could have been anybody.
That's the interesting thing. I mean, how far back, I mean, when we're talking about a personality disorder, I mean, if you were to, and obviously we don't know, this would just be pure speculation, but if we're to look back in this woman's world, in this woman's life, are things like this rooted in trauma, or is it rooted in just upbringing, in conditioning from those around her to view the world through this prism of essentially fear that then she defines as basically anything existential that makes her uncomfortable or annoys her, basically?
I don't think we have any evidence that this kind of thing is rooted in trauma. It's not really a PTSD response, because mm-hmm. in truth, it's more about anger than it is about fear. And I think mm-hmm. saying I'm frightened just sort of becomes the excuse to be angry all the time. Because clearly in the documentary, she was baiting the kids and baiting their parents. And she was the one setting up the confrontations and the conflict. And a person like this, it's kind of like they get high off the anger and they mm-hmm. like having a fight going on. Even though she'll call the police and say, oh, I'm afraid for my life, or I'm so frightened, or whatever, that was just the story that she's telling that justified the rage.
I did some research on this last week, and NBC News had reported that in her court records, it said something about child abuse in her history. But again, a lot of people do have that in their history.
Yeah.
And they don't do things like this.
No. So. Child abuse, depending on how we define it, is pretty much a norm in America. You know, people do not optimally raise their children. Some kind of, you know, really unusual, severe situation may have contributed. But yeah, to just say that people abuse as children go up and murder neighbors and develop paranoia. No. But yeah, we're all a product of the genetics that we get and the upbringing that we have. But the cluster A disorders, which include a few other things beside the paranoid type that I'm talking about, it is typically looked at very much rooted in genetic tendencies.
I want to understand a little bit more. The cluster A versus cluster B versus cluster C.
Yeah.
They all make a great breakfast cereal when you put them all together. A little milk on there, a little whole milk, and stir it around. A little extra sugar sometimes. I like bananas on my cluster A, B, C's. They're quite delicious. But cluster A, the odd eccentric, versus cluster B, you know, the more emotional, more erratic. Can you speak to that just so we can understand kind of the difference and the defining factors? And is there any crossover in some of these traits between the A's and the B's? Because I think a lot of people will look at her and go, well, she's very narcissistic. Yeah. She's, you know, and sometimes I think we hear cluster B so much, we think, well, everything's cluster B.
Everything's cluster B. Yeah. Every awful person is a narcissist now.
Yeah. Yeah. Walk me through that a little bit more.
All right. Grad school lecture here. Let's see.
Yes,
how to put this into a few seconds. They have a different pattern. And cluster B, we think of those people as being very dramatic, very big in their personalities. They typically are very grandiose. So you have a bunch of different categories of them, but they're very noticeable. The cluster A folks are typically the people you don't notice, the people who are kind of in the background and strange. They're not really typically attention seeking. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a simple way to put it. The cluster B people typically don't have a lot of empathy or compassion for other people. And the cluster A person may, but only in certain situations. And if it's somebody that they're paranoid about, obviously they lose empathy and compassion for them.
Mm-hmm. So is narcissism a big piece in cluster A too, or is there a difference between the narcissist that's a cluster B versus a cluster A?
There's a lot of difference between cluster A and cluster B, but you can say that a cluster A person, a person with paranoid personality disorder, can have cluster B tendencies and mm-hmm. some traits in a specific area. So you could have this sense of entitlement, this sort of grandiose opinion about oneself, this dramatic flair, which this lady had at times when talking to the police and painting mm-hmm. herself as such a victim. She was very dramatic. And that could be looked at as these little narcissistic tendencies. And in fact, in my book on mass killers, I talk about many, many mass shooters. The profile you see is this combination of narcissism, psychopathy, which is all cluster B, and then you throw in some paranoia from cluster A. Mm-hmm. And people with paranoia with guns are very dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I think we all have run into folks like this. I mean, I wouldn't want to say the classic get off my lawn kids type person, but it's that to an extreme. It's that when this is amped up. What made this person different than the cantankerous older person that we hear, like, yeah, get off my lawn, kids, you know, be quiet, that sort of thing? What turned this person into something beyond that? Or are all of those types of folks basically this, but this one had access to a weapon mm-hmm. and what poor decision-making skills? I mean, where do you think the difference is here between just, again, there's cantankerous people all over the place, mm-hmm. but we don't necessarily need to live in fear that they're going to shoot us.
No.
And that's, I think, it's a fine line here to draw, because I think one could watch this documentary and go, oh shit, like what if they go do this? And it's good to be aware, but there is a difference between just kind of being, you know, a little, you know, touchy on things versus I'm going to keep going to this extreme.
Yeah, I think every neighborhood has got somebody who doesn't like kids being loud or mm-hmm. whatever, and often it's an older person, and that's really within normal limits, normal behavior. But what I saw in the documentary was this escalating war between the woman and the parents and the kids. And again, we only saw glimpses of what was going on in the documentary, but it was alluded that this was just a consistent, chronic, escalating kind of condition. And I mm-hmm. think that's unusual, because what I was perceiving is that this woman was feeding off it, thriving it, contributing to the escalation, and this became kind of a central organizing feature of her life. That's mm-hmm. rare. That's a lot different than cranky grandpa down at the corner, you know. And folks who are intent on escalating this kind of a battle, calling the police out all the time, throwing things at the kids, yelling profanity at the kids, you know, all the ways that this was escalating, this is an unusual person. And I think everybody in the neighborhood, they all called her the Karen or whatever. Mm-hmm. Everybody got a sense that there was something wrong here. And I would guess that the police at some point should have been having some meetings about what's really going on here and
yes.
how do we intervene in a more effective way, because this was outside the scale of typical human behavior.
She should have been behind bars and maybe in a mental institution. I mean, this behavior, there was no evidence that these kids were doing anything other than being kids.
Mm-hmm.
And even the police officer said, you know, they're just out there having fun. Mm-hmm. They could be out, you know, what did they say? Burglarizing things, but they're just out there having fun playing football. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on.
But I mean, how do you propose putting someone like that in a mental institution?
But
who did it do it? Who's complaining chronically?
A nuisance. Was she not a nuisance? There was nothing going on.
We don't put people who are nuisances in mental institutions.
Well, no, I get that. So all right, I exaggerated. Sorry.
But how would something like this be handled, I guess? You know, I mean, how could have this been handled differently by those around her at the time? I mean, with the police intervention, with the kids that were out there all the time, without just completely conforming to the woman's desires and requests, just to keep her at bay, what would have been a path possibly that could have de-escalated this that wouldn't necessarily involve her making a good choice? Because, you know, she's not going to.
No. Mm-hmm.
Kids are going to be kids. Mm-hmm. Where could someone or something have intervened? Could the police have intervened in any way other than what they did? Because when we watch this, it looks like they were pretty much just following the law. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't look at this and like the police did anything wrong. They showed up.
They kept
entertaining her.
They kept.
Yeah. I mean, they were doing what they were supposed to do. Granted, off camera, you know, or out of her, you know, earshot, that you could hear their comments of like, my God, you know, and them going to the children and saying, you know, be kids. Go do what you're going to do. You know, mm-hmm. It's okay. And I thought, you know, this is great. But at the same time, you have the powder keg over here and you're basically telling the kids, keep playing with fire. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, was that a bad call on the part of the police? I mean, I totally agree with what they're saying. And the kids were in the right to be playing. But at the same point, you know, it's you know, you keep poking the thing with the stick. Mm-hmm. Eventually something bad is going to happen. It wasn't necessarily de-escalating the situation, mm-hmm. which would have, you know, probably maybe prolonged this, or maybe this wouldn't have gone as far as it could have. How do you make somebody happy in a situation like that? Or just can you not? Does somebody have to give at some point?
What I would love to have seen happen, which of course probably in the real world, my fantasies don't ever really get to happen, but this would have been a wonderful case where you had a mental health therapist who works with the police.
Thank you.
That by the third call, the third Thank time you. A call like this came in, that person went out and in a very compassionate, kind way said, I want to sit down with this lady, Susan Lorenz. I want to sit down, Susan. And let's talk about you. Let's talk about your life. What's going on here? I was continually wondering, which is what I would ask here, why did you move to this neighborhood, right? Lots of kids
True.
Here.
Yeah.
You've got racist beliefs. What is this process that's happening? And I think a mental health person could have gotten some inroads with her to possibly come up with ways to de-escalate this in some way. And again, then possibly that same person or someone else could have worked as a mediator with the parents, done more work talking with the kids, because I think at some point the kids were angry, understandably, and they did do things, you know, ring her doorbell and run and right. things like that, which just fed into the whole game that she was, in fact, I think, the one controlling it. But how to help the other people learn to cope with the fact that there's a lady who's not quite right living over here. And how do we break this up? And so that's where we can't expect the police to be mental health therapists. They're not. And mm-hmm. they get put in that position all the time of Yum. Having to deal with people who are not, you know, not right in the head. There's something wrong. But we need to hire mental health people in that role to do those things. I used to work in mobile crisis where I would get called out to assist police often, but it was more just a crisis intervention to try to determine if somebody needed to go into a mental health hospital or be held for 72 hours, that kind of thing. And so I would get to go out and do some really short-term crisis intervention, which was helpful. But in a case like this, it would be lovely to have a person who had a bit more time and maybe go out and visit her periodically. You know, mm-hmm. if you did an initial assessment, maybe she needed medication. Maybe there were things that could have been done for her. I don't know. Or maybe they would have gotten a sense this lady is really, really dangerous and we need to flag her name so that she doesn't get issued a gun permit or can't purchase a gun.
I don't mean to interrupt you, Siobhan, but I think that's what I was getting at, is that it seemed like something was missing. There was a piece missing here, that it was just repeated call after call And there's a problem with her. There's something not right with her, which we've established.
Yeah.
And look how it ended. Did it have to end this way? And Tony, I know you think I'm kind of nuts that I said, you know, she should be in a mental institution, but that's my gut goes, something's wrong with her.
Something's
Why
wrong.
Aren't we dealing with sure. her?
Yeah.
And that's a big problem that we have because, I mean, this, you talk to any police department and they got somebody that they're showing up to calls every single day.
All the time.
And it's the same thing over and over and over. And there's nothing they seemingly can do. I mean, I completely agree, Siobhan. Like, those would be great ways of dealing with it, but we don't have it. We don't have the funding for it. We don't have the people. They don't exist. I mean, most of and that's like a structural problem with the actual system itself. The system is working as it's supposed to, but the system at the end of the day is not working, and not even optimally. It's barely getting by. It's barely surviving and barely serving the people that it's supposed to serve. So when you have something like this, it is just, okay, well, we just got to kind of keep them sufficed. And then either they break a law and you arrest them for some sort of minor infraction. I mean, obviously this was not a minor infraction, but in a lot of cases it is. And then, okay, then they go back and it's just the same cycle over and over and nothing can be done unless that person truly wants to get help. But they don't think anything's wrong.
No.
They think they're in the right. And this woman to this day still thinks she's in the right.
Yep.
I mean, is that, I mean, are we dealing essentially with, in a lot of ways, yes, obviously a personality disorder, but also someone who is stunted emotionally, maturity-wise, where you don't keep escalating shit with children. You don't, you don't keep going up and up and up. My kids are going to do that because they're kids, because their brains haven't been developed, because they're not mature. She seemed to be operating on almost the same sort of mental level as the children of, you do this, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'm going to tell on you. I mean, essentially, it's telling on people because this is what she does. And then when mom actually came over, she shoots her. But it's a very archaic way of thinking, a very immature way of thinking, it seems, that she's operating under.
Yeah, this would be a person who thinks, one of my favorite terms is primitively. So yeah, childlike, it's black and white, it's good and bad, and I'm the good guy and they're the bad guy, and that's as deep as it goes. And that's why her history would be so fascinating, because this is a person who's probably very disconnected from other human beings and does not have a rich social life or family around her, because everybody has cut ties with her because she's so odd. And
then those are the enemies. Those are the bad people.
Exactly.
They just don't understand me. That's how that's,
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.